If it's not happened to you, it's very hard to imagine. We are talking sexual abuse here on Radio Gorgeous today with a South African-born actress who was abused by her stepfather. Her book is called Indescribable, and it was first published in South Africa in 2010. It has now been published in London. She is Candice Derman. Hello, Candice, and welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So my job's reading books for interviews, and I was on holiday in Romania, and I couldn't sleep in the early morning. I started to read your book, and I read it from cover to cover there and then, and I've never done that with any book in my life before.
Well, I have to say thank you. I have to say thank you for being brave and going on the journey with the child me. So I think it is a book that one should read, how you read it, and I'm privileged to be here.
So it is told in your young self, your young voice, which is even more moving. But listen, let's see what my first question is. The book you told in your childhood voice, let's go back there. Tell us about your life in South Africa before your stepfather arrived.
Well, I was the youngest of five sisters, which is a glorious thing because you've got all these girls to play with and look up to. And I had an extraordinary mother who was unbelievably playful with all of us. I would say she was one of the girls, one of the sisters. She wasn't
a mummy.
Yeah. No, mm. She was very beautiful.
And young
she was
at heart.
Exactly. Yeah. Outgoing, vivacious and fun. And growing up in South Africa is very special at the time. Although there were political things going on, of course, I never understood it. So in my life, it was all about swimming pools and running under sprinklers, under the hot South African sun. And we were raised with animals. And there was a sense of freedom and love within my family of girls. My dad was a bit distant. He was a runner. My mom and dad, I would say, weren't very happy, but I don't really remember the dynamic. But it was a house of girls and a house of laughter in a very large home.
So your mom and dad split up. Can you remember that?
I can remember that. I actually...
How old were you?
Just before six, I think. No, because in my book, I think I was around 7 or 8. I don't remember the exact age. But what I do know is, which is such a bizarre feeling, is that I was happy that they were getting divorced because I knew my mom wasn't happy. And my mom always had a...
Did she confide in you?
My mom had an incredible sense of freedom when he wasn't there. We would all be covered in mud or we'd all be playing wildly and my dad would come and that energy would go.
Yeah. I have the same thing even now with my husband. I mean, I love him very much. But it's like we're all like the naughty children and he's the daddy coming home.
Yeah. Luckily, my husband's got used to us all being the naughty children, so he actually partakes.
Great.
But what's interesting is, yes, my mum's energy changed completely. And when they told us, my dad actually told us they were getting divorced, which I think is in the book, where we're sitting at this table and he tells us my mum goes for a run and comes back and calls me out to ask what they were talking about. But... my heart was happy because even though I didn't have the words to articulate it, I understood that it would be easier for her.
Great for your mum. And also you didn't know, again, because this is probably a subject we're going to talk about constantly in this podcast, you didn't know the big picture. So you didn't know that splitting up was a bad thing. You
no,
know?
No, because you never...
You saw it from your point of view and your mum's point of view. You're empathising with her.
Yeah.
So so you had this fabulous childhood. You're the youngest of five. Were they all her own children? Were her children?
They were all her children.
Wow. So she was very young when she started.
She started at 19 and carried on. So I don't think, they weren't very happy, but they had a lot of girls.
Yeah.
So, yes, she started.
How old was the oldest daughter?
10 years older than me.
Okay, so she really was quick fire.
Very much so. So I was the biggest break. I think between me and my closest to me is 3 and a bit, and the rest were really 18 months. So my mom really, but although we loop babies, so the early days with the loop, my mom had it in and she still fell pregnant. So she wasn't trying for me necessarily.
Yeah.
Or my sister. But so she tried for 3 and then.
I've never heard of 5 girls before. I'm one of 4 and just 5 is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a house of 5 girls, but then it was an unusual decision that your sisters did not all stay with your mother.
No, because my one sister eventually moved to Israel, and she still lives there. And then my two...
Is that because aren't you half Jewish?
Yes, well, yeah. Religion is a strange thing in my house.
It doesn't exist.
Yes, or it doesn't like to be spoken about, mm-hmm. and there's truths that might be misplaced or, you know...
But your dad was...
My dad was Jewish. He is, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And my mum, there is Jewish in her family. We were raised Jewish initially, and then my father came in and we had Christmases. Yeah. So that's a bit confusing. Yeah. Jodie, my one sister who moved in with my dad, was a runner, and my dad was a runner, and she was very physical, and they had a very close relationship. So she was the second oldest. Mm. So she was 8 years older than me. So if I'm 8, she is 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. She's about 15. Mm. I can't, you know, and then Romy, who moved in with my dad, she was very close to my dad and to Jodie. So Romy, who I was very close to and who's big in the book, moved away, and that was terrible for me. And I think because there was a strange thing of my father saying, you're not allowed to sit on the fence, which I think you should never do with children. I think children are allowed to sit where they want to.
Yeah, and they must just be flexible.
Exactly.
It's got to be flexible.
Yes. Yeah. So there were these kind of bizarre rules that were told, and I think that's why choices were made. Exactly. Mm. And this was my actual father. So I stopped seeing my father from a very young age. No, and he didn't really push it either way.
He hadn't bonded with you particularly.
No.
That's sad.
I was the youngest, and I guess was very close to my mom.
Yeah, you were the baby.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they split up. Was your mum, do you think, already having an affair?
Absolutely. With I put that in the book. Mm. So I don't know. So as I say, I don't know the exact dates of when my mom told me to when they got divorced and when she was seeing Joe. But she definitely was having an affair, and I think my mom had a few. So I think she was a woman who desired love. She was beautiful, and she wanted a lot of compliments and acceptance.
She wanted to feel sexy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and attractive.
Definitely. And that's what fed her.
Yeah.
And
this man, Joe, obviously had a lot of charm.
Oh, he absolutely did. So
tell us about the first time you met him.
So,
do you remember it?
Well, as I say in my book, I remember at the ocean. My mom, I could see, was very comfortable with him. He took me to the loo. We didn't find one. It was this odd interaction that he quickly was very comfortable with me. He was comfortable with my mom, and eventually I settled into be comfortable with them together. So it's a very strange thing, because as a very young person, and now me as a mother, we got to be so careful, because our children are so trusting of us as mothers. They are...
Well, children trust adults that are nice to them.
Exactly. So my mom looked at Joe, and he looked like he was someone she could trust, and that was the journey we went on.
What did he look like?
He was dark. He was Portuguese.
Wow.
Yeah, so from Zimbabwe, and he was handsome. He was slightly overweight, but slightly strong as well. So he sat in the middle of being attractive and being comfortable. He was a strong man.
And older than...
No, I would say a little bit younger than my mom. Mm. He had a lot of charisma. He was very articulate.
Wasn't he successful as well? He had a furniture company.
No, that was my mom's company that eventually she gave over to him. So it was actually my grandfather was an incredible businessman, and he started this furniture business that my mom signed over to Joe. So she gave him everything, which he eventually lost.
He came into the house, he moved in. Did they marry or not?
They did marry, and it was a big marriage.
Mm. Did he have children from before?
He did, he had two children, two sons, who lived with their mother in Zimbabwe, but used to come for holidays. So that was very lovely. We got close to the boys. And it was this family, the outside of a family, I always say when I speak to people, it's so odd, because it's such a... aesthetic Hollywood movie family, a big house, everything looks so good. You know, it's a house you want to visit, and you'll go, wow, look at this, wow, look at that.
Big house.
My mom was like, my goodness, you're the mom of five girls, and she was always so proud. So it's so interesting, because I always say, you know, it doesn't matter. Our curtains can be different. Our economic status can be different. The world can look beautiful, but what happens inside can be incredibly ugly.
Exactly. Yeah. I had a fight with... our family had a kind of fight on Monday, you know, sitting at the dinner table, everyone screaming at each other. And I was really upset. And then I thought, how many other people are having this same thing? And I bet there are lots of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that people act... When no one's around, you can, your defences go down and you can become very horrible to each other in the family, can't you?
Absolutely.
But anyway, let's go on about... So you met him, he took you to the loo, you liked him, you saw your mum was happy with him.
Yeah, I just weed behind a bush eventually, like one does, like what my daughter does if we don't find a toilet now, you know.
Exactly.
And eventually, yes, I settled in between them two. I was very comfortable. Also, my dad wasn't a very loving man. So all of a sudden, there's this man, Joe, who's big, who's like a father figure, who's loving. You know, a small child can ease into that very quickly.
Of course, yeah. It's very natural. Yeah. And, all, you know, he's taking your father's place. And if your father wasn't that good at it, then why not?
Exactly.
So when was the first time he did something to you?
I think before they were married, and I was afraid. I had lots of nightmares when I was a child, and this is before Joe.
Vivid imagination.
Exactly. Mm. And I went into my mum's bed and I lay on the side of Joe because I knew my mum didn't like me coming into her bed at night. And that's where Joe touched me for the first time. And as I say, I took his hand away, he put it back. I took his hand away, put it back, and eventually I left it. And I think that's such a...
Where did he touch you?
On my vagina. And I think that's the interesting thing about the beginning of abuse is it's taken away the hand, it's put back, it's taken away, and then it's just letting go, and then the hand stays, and then the journey will continue.
But also it's like you tried to fight, but then you just gave up, because how can you fight a tall, big... grown-up who's a male,
and you're so shocked that so I'm a young child, I'm turning eight. You don't know about this action, you're aware it feels wrong, but you don't kind of understand it, so you're fighting passively because you're in the bed, it's nighttime, you're trying to work it all out, so it's incredibly confusing. And then you have this strange thing of giving over. And that's why in my book I talk about and how it develops being part of the furniture and how you become a bed or you become a mattress or you become what's inside the mattress. Because people who have been hurt learn to disappear. And I think that's part of the coping mechanism, is you just go inside and you just become a piece of fabric.
So you sort of, you just became, you let... your spirit and your soul die within you, and you became, as you say, just a functioning thing.
Yes. So you, the beauty of being a child, or what I believe I was blessed with, is you're still a child. So you can compartmentalize everything. So when I was there and when things were happening, I became nothing. But then when things weren't, I was a child again, and I could play and I could laugh and I could partake. And I think that's what's so confusing for people and why people don't spot it, because you're still just a child. You're still looking for affirmation. You're still looking to play. You want to be with your friends.
So he touched you that night.
Yes.
What happened? Do you remember what happened in the next few days?
Really, really confused. I don't remember exactly.
Of course.
But I know that Joe was really, really nice to me. I was trying to work it out in my head, and life goes on. You know, you eat your breakfast, and then the next day happens, and you're eating
and
dinner.
Also, just nothing said.
Nothing's
said, you think it's irrelevant.
So it starts, and then because it starts creeping up on you, and it's carrying on. And
so when was the next, do you remember the next moves?
Well, the next moves... they all seem to take place very closely afterwards, because Joe became very quickly a part of our family. Joe became my dad very quickly. So
did you call him dad?
I did call him dad. Yeah. I wanted him to adopt me, or my mum did, and he was so proud of me. So I started acting when I was very young, and I'd be in a show and the show was good, and he'd pick me up and he'd put me on his shoulders, and he'd be so proud, as a father would be. And then, if I was afraid at night, I'd go back into the bedroom. So it's a very straight, or he'd come to my bedroom. It's a very strange thing, because this person who is hurting you...
You loved him as well.
Yeah, and he was giving me something I did not ever have before. I didn't have that kind of affirmation and
verbal awards.
My mom was very self. Mm. So my mom is a wonderful woman, and she still is, but she's in self. And I think...
What do you mean?
Well, she can be... Because she was beautiful,
Things came to her as opposed to giving out.
She wanted to be told she was beautiful.
Yeah, she wanted yeah, to be... Yeah, so she wasn't... Ego.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, and yeah. What I realized, again, I was saying to my husband, what I really know about for myself being a mom now, it's a doing word. A mom is physical. Yeah. A mom is awake. Yeah. And a mom is awake at all times.
Yeah,
and
we know that.
Yeah. So I think for me, my mom might have slipped up because maybe she was at the hairdresser for too long. Or maybe, her eyeliner wasn't done correctly.
She was thinking about herself a bit too much.
And I understand, we all have fragilities, which that would fall into what my mom had, and vulnerabilities. Mm. And they can come... in a superficial way, but I think she...
I'm going to say, because that's one of my questions. What do you think she was ever aware of it?
I don't think she was ever aware. I think if you couldn't ever be aware of something so horrible, but I think she was uneasy with Joe. And I think, if my mom looks back now, my mom carries so much guilt and so much sadness with it. I think there were signs, and I don't think that ugliness is... You can't imagine.
But do you think she didn't want to know?
I can't answer that. Mm. I know I love my mom. I know I am not angry towards her. And whatever she sits with now, she needs to sit with. I can't heal her and I can't take away. If she known, she wouldn't have known. It might have been a subconscious thing, saying. Think, yeah. So it didn't sit on the... It didn't sit...
So she felt uneasy. It's like there's a part of her that knew something.
Exactly. But looking back, she would probably go, oh, my goodness, there were signs.
Yeah. Yeah,
and in our discussions, but it, being in it and having daily... Also, what's interesting about life is it goes on. Mm. So when I write about the abuse, it can be Joe hurting me for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and then life goes on.
Can we talk in detail about the abuse, what he actually did to you physically?
Well, so he physically did what you can imagine... That is unimaginable.
So did he have sex with you?
He did have sex with me.
But you had a very small vagina at the time.
Yes. Well, he was very... He grew me from 8 till... The first time he had sex or abused me was 11. Yeah, so a lot of stuff. So there were... Mm. He did everything, but didn't have... He didn't put his penis inside of me, so until I was 11. So there was a lot.
So probably because there wasn't. So there you was weren't also, ready for.
And
it.
He was. Yeah. There was a huge process. So he would go down on me. He'd make me go on him. There was everything. And then by the time I remember going on holiday when I was 11, and the first time was when we were in the shower in. Port Elizabeth or one of the places we were on holiday, and that was the first time. And anyway, I'm in the shower, I write in my book, and it's what I'm behaving like now. There's no words for it. You are silenced. And again, all I can say while I'm sitting here with you is I can hear the shower. And
so you
the
switched
silence.
Off a big
you truly,
part of you
well you have off. To because and it was sore.
Was there any part of you that enjoyed it? I mean,
Yes, because tragically your body responds. So no, I hated it. And yes, there were moments
even as a child your body responds?
Yes.
Because I didn't start having sexual...
Well, your body...
I never touched myself, you see, whereas I've got other sisters that did.
Yeah.
And, so I know you can masturbate at a young age, so there are
What's
feelings
What's frightening
there.
Is you, I think you... start developing earlier because you don't know about these things, and then your body starts knowing a touch. So I think that's the tragedy of so many children being hurt, is you absolutely hate it and you hate the person, but then the person's representing a family member, in my case my stepdad, and you love him, and then he's touching you and you hate it, but your body might be starting to feel nice. So it's hell.
Yes.
It's
so like many being in mixed
feelings. Yeah. And I think that is one of the biggest tragedies of everything is you feel horrific guilt. You hate yourself. You know, there's so much self confusion because our bodies are sexual beings and they're meant to go on the journey later. And I was hurt very early and I had to learn about my own body as a woman and as a teenager and the ownership that it belongs to me. What's interesting now as a mother again, and I have to always go back to being a mother because I'm a mother to a daughter, and already Summer being 3.5, like she's already aware of her self-worth. And I think that's like very important to me that this is her body. And very early on, you know, when I have to wipe her bum or wipe her wee, she is in charge of this. I'm just cleaning her. You know, it's so important for me that Summer knows that she owns it and it's beautiful and she is the ruler of it even so early. And I think I wasn't taught that. If I think back to myself, I was never taught about self-love very early or...
It's our generation though, isn't it? It wasn't awareness of self, but wasn't even the word self-love. You know, we were brought up in the 70s, you know, it was all about pop music, as you say, bubblegum and the Osmonds.
Yeah.
You know, you know, and our mothers were drinking gin and tonic and going to parties, you know. And the most reflective they got was maybe yoga.
Absolutely.
Which was fashionable. But, you know, things have moved on so much for women.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic time to be a woman now, you know. Self-confidence, self-love. And also, I don't know. Anyway, so, God, I'm getting very, very deep.
Yes.
So how did the abuse affect you in your teenage... No, sorry. This is such a big question.
Yes.
How did it stop?
Because,
and how long did it go on for?
So it went on for 7 years. It stopped because I think I became a teenager and I became angry. And I started questioning a lot. I started hating him more because I wasn't so confused. I realized this is really wrong. I had a beautiful boyfriend who showed me what communication was, what good love was, what it felt like to kiss, and what it felt like to kiss someone beautiful who was making me excited mentally and physically. And I started needing to tell someone. All of a sudden I became desperate. So I wanted to tell Romy, but I didn't know how to tell Romy. I was, in terms of inside myself, I was going mad inside myself. I knew it was eventually going to have to come out. And then Romy and I had a discussion and it came out with Romy. But I think puberty was what made it come out because I guess I had enough. I guess I was tired. I guess I was tired of being...
But also your personality took over. You know, your strengths.
Yes.
You know, you found a... you're becoming a woman, so you've got your own identity.
Yes.
You're moving from being a child who is dependent to independence. So what was your sister's reaction?
Oh, devastation, really. Jo had touched Romy, never went as far as me, but he did try.
And what did she just tell him to
my other sister, he tried and she like told him, you know, she was away a lot and never happened again.
Mm.
And with Romy, it happened a few times, touching her there. But devastation, and still to this day, you know, Romy and I are incredibly close. She's a very sensitive...
So did she say, right, we're going to go and tell mum?
Yeah.
And it's funny how you need a sister, because I come from this big family, and it's like, you need the other sister because it could nearly say it for you because you're so scared.
Yeah. And also... they words, I don't know. I don't even know, because we're in the combi. What do you call a car in London, those big cars? In South Africa, we call them combis.
Yeah.
We're in this big
People
car.
Carrier.
With all. Yeah, we're in this big car that my mum drove us all in. And that day was
surreal,
horrific. Yeah, surreal and ongoing.
Mm.
Like, felt like we were in there forever.
Mm.
And my mum believed me straight away. But then the aftermath of my mum believing and how she coped with it and the court case and the ugliness that came out afterwards. At times I thought it was more horrendous to even tell the story than keeping the secret.
Because no one saw the destruction afterwards.
And no one tells a parent how to deal with something so horrific in a home. So you can get it really wrong. And my mum got it wrong, and she got loud with it, and she phoned her friends, and she'd like talk about Joe terribly over the phone, and I'd hear it, and I'd hear what happened to me over the phone. So it just became more horrendous. And what's very interesting for me, just to add in, that's why it was incredibly important for me just to write about the abuse. I was never going to write about the after effects from being a teenager, which I think is another book in itself. That's those silent years, I call it, of surviving what happened. But I felt that the book, the ugliness of what takes place, needed to stand alone.
Do you think that Joe was attracted to your family because your mum had five daughters?
I don't know. I think he was attracted to the personality of my mum because he could take ownership of her. And then she had five daughters because we were very split up. So she had five daughters, but really she had two living with her and then three living with her. I think he just wanted to take advantage of her.
Do you think his abuse was to do with power, or was he a paedophile, or was he both, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like, was he just a pure paedophile, or was he someone that enjoyed power?
I think both. Yeah. I think he was, like I said, he was a very articulate, bright man who could manipulate a lot of people.
So he got turned on by manipulating.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm sure it's both. I can't go into Joe's psyche because after you know, he went to jail for...
So he did go?
He did go to jail, but for a very short time.
Not long.
No, I mean, I think he was out in 6 months at the time. And I don't know...
I suppose in those days as well, it's like he wouldn't be like now as Megan's or whatever.
Exactly.
He'd be outed, but now he could just go...
different. Yeah. So he got, I think 2 years and he was out in 6 months. So I've never, for me, to heal and to go on my own journey and to love well, I could not go on Joe's journey and think about why.
You don't want to go into his psyche.
I can't answer for him.
No. You don't know anything about him.
No.
And what about your relationship with your mother now?
My relationship with my mum is complex, but it's also fine. We've been very close in our lives.
She's still in South Africa.
She's still in South Africa. Mm. And we've been very, very close in our lives. And we've also been distant in our lives. And I think, you know, the truth is, when you've gone through something like my family has gone through and what I've been through,
which is a massive, massive trauma.
Yeah, huge trauma. It changes you.
Yeah.
And it changes your relationship with people. Mm. And the beauty is that we still have a relationship. And we're still kind to each other.
Well, kindness is love, I believe. Yeah. I believe that is ultimate love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. So do you find now you're a mother that more feelings are coming up about
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Mm. So not coming up in seeing what Joe did to me and seeing my past and being hurt for myself. It comes up because I'm looking at Summer and I'm seeing this extraordinary person, and I want to build her and I want to grow her. And what I can say for myself now is, with what happened to me, I want my past not to ever infiltrate or hurt her. I wanted to give her tools to be the best of her and to help her to understand that she's a hugely strong person who can communicate and not be afraid of communication, even if things are frightening and scary.
And what about, did you have to have a lot of therapy, Candace?
I haven't. I've been, like, in South Africa, I've had therapy. I've never found good therapists. I found therapists, like, really not great. I think when you've done so much self-work, it's very hard to find someone who is equal and won't pigeonhole you what abuse is meant to look like and how you meant to cope and all of that. And then when I came to London, I actually came...
How long ago did you
come? 5 years ago. Yeah. I came and I was feeling a bit stuck in myself. So it didn't have much to do with what happened to me in the past. I was just struggling. My husband and I had moved from Singapore. We went on a big journey and I wanted to speak to someone. And I found the most extraordinary therapist who has been amazing and has become a friend after a very long journey, not seeing her for many years because I had my daughter. But so she, I would say, has been a huge help, not because of what happened to me in the past, but just having someone who I can communicate as a woman.
What about sexual relations with men afterwards? I mean, they must have been affected.
Absolutely affected, confusing. And I've liked sex in the past, but then it could always end up with me crying and with me being hurt. And luckily for myself, I've always chosen pretty much wonderful people. So I've never went on the path of my mom. I've been with very...
You're more aware of controlling
yes,
men.
And now I've been married to my husband for 19 years and we've been on an extraordinary journey and he's my witness and he's my lover and we've gone on such a mental journey that part of that is our sexual, physical journey and, you know, we're in a very beautiful space and I feel very privileged for that.
How did you meet?
In South Africa. He was coming to visit South Africa from London and we met and he basically stayed there. So that was it until we moved here. We got married a week after meeting.
What?
Yes. He asked me two.
What?
Yes, he asked me 2 days afterwards, after we went for a walk in the forest in Eisner, and I had to go back to Johannesburg to go do a TV show, and he flew on the next aeroplane. He was with me. We stayed at a hotel. And the next morning, I was in the hotel room with him. I said to him, please always remain the spontaneous. And he said to me, what do you mean? I said, you must always keep it. He said, will you marry me? And I said, yes. And we eloped to Mauritius.
Everyone must have thought you were completely mad.
They did. And yeah. I guess didn't. Because also then you start being aware of a character. So I don't think they thought it was...
No, that's Candace again.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but what the privileges of life is, 19 years later, I was blessed to have met the right person for me. And we've
and
got
for him to come to terms of everything you've been through and he'd only known you that short time.
Yes, and we had huge discussions very early on. Mm. So everything was intense and very big. Yeah. But Jonathan's never carried my story. So what's happened to me, I've never given it to him. There's no baton to give over. Mm. You know, this is, if I'm in, for myself, if my own pain on whatever level, it belongs to me. And even with things I struggle with now, they're mine.
That's what I was going to say about anxiety and depression. You must have suffered from that.
Oh, well, I think I can still sit in a nonness or in a...
you can cut yourself off easily.
Definitely.
Yeah. So my children complain to me all the time that I can just literally go in a zone. And also I have real problem with feelings. I just don't feel them, you know. And so I don't know what that's about. I'd had an unhappy childhood and I really think... You just learn to switch off.
Well, there's a horrible word that I hate, and it's ambivalence. And you can become ambivalent about certain things.
Yeah, so even if my children are having a traumatic time, I can be cut off from it, you know, which I do feel bad about, but I can't make the feelings come. Yeah. Have you had that similar?
Well, I've just got to say, if I may say, it's so brave of you to say that, because it's a big thing to say, and it's an uncomfortable thing to say. For me, yes, there are things that I can be... I guess when you've gone on such big journeys and you've had to look through so many of your own, you've had to open your dark curtains in yourself and you've had to look through so much that we can't be affected by everything because then we wouldn't be walking strong and walking tall. And I think for myself, I can be ambivalent and I haven't got to the stage with my daughter yet that I don't feel she makes me feel everything that I'm quite exhausted from feeling so much.
I know.
So I will let you know in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to Jonathan and to summer, I mean, I guess I'm in a snow globe and they are my people and they're my people that can open my heart and they can open it wide, and I can see tears that I don't see with many other people. So I can see my truth with them, and with other people, I have my ambivalence and I can switch off.
So do you put something like a cloak on yourself or something so you don't get hurt? Do you have psychic armor you put on?
If I may go back to something, like, I found it so interesting when I started writing my book, I had to wear this, I had makeup, I had my high heels. I was like this power writer. I had to look so different to what I was writing. And I think it's similar to what you taught. That was my armor. I was going to tell my childhood story, but I was going to look fine while doing it. I was going to look like a woman. I wasn't going to represent what I went through. And I think now in my life with having summer, I think I have less armor because I'm on a journey with her.
You're also really, really in love with somebody. I mean, having a child was the first time. I mean, as much as I love my husband, but I really felt connected to love. If you know what I mean? Because it's the biggest passion you've ever felt in your life. I said it's bigger than your first boyfriend. You
know? Well, what's interesting is with Jonathan, because I think how we began, it was so quick.
Yeah,
and intense. And he's been such an extraordinary partner with me that he is truly, I have been privileged. And so I have two loves.
Aww.
And I say to someone, I always tell her, you know, she is part of our love story. She's been made out of love. And that feels lucky.
So it took quite a long time for you to have children.
It did. We didn't want to have children.
Oh, that's so interesting. Both of you.
Well, eventually more Jonathan than me. But we were selfish, unbelievably close. We traveled. We explored.
So, hang on, sorry.
Yeah.
An intense relationship with one person.
Yes, exactly.
You repeated it.
Exactly. So,
sorry.
It's so true. So we went on this journey together and we journeyed. And then I felt...
Ready.
And it took Jonathan a bit more time.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness. Yes, and is he in love with his daughter? It's a glorious world that those two are living in.
Yeah.
So if I look at them...
I think the man often doesn't want it, and then when it happens, they're shocked at how much they adore it.
You know,
I think that really does happen. I've met so many men, especially very childlike men, who are often like to be centre of attention and things, just say, oh, I don't want children. Then they are the best dads, because they're the clowns and the fun people.
Well, I always told Jonathan he'd be brilliant, because he's actually not childlike. He's like a tree. He's very rooted. Oh. So I feel like
he's strong alone.
So Summer and I, it's quite lovely. I think we like the apples and we the leaves on him. You know, but he's very rooted and it's beautiful. So for me as a mom and what's happened to me in my past, I feel like well done to me for giving her such a good dad.
Now, what about stranger danger? Are you more paranoid, do you think, than other people?
No. It's about me teaching Summer. Mm. So when I speak to Summer now, if we're watching Peter Rabbit, I tell her in the world there are Mr. McGregors and there's Mr. Todds and there are all these characters that we are seeing in film that, yes, strangers can not be kind and we need to be aware of strangers. So I think speaking about it in Summer's language is very important because innately we have a wariness and that wariness is good. We've been given it. So I don't want to take it away from her. I want her to be aware of being careful but not afraid.
So have you ever thought about working in the world of kind of abuse and helping?
Of course. And it's frustrating for me because even this book, like people are afraid to read it.
Yes. But I was.
Yeah, of course.
I'd had it for a month before I dared read it. Because I thought, I don't want to be hurt.
I know. And I want people to read it. Not
but
for me now.
It's actually a very beautiful book.
Yes, because it's survival.
Yes.
Thank you.
I
want people to read it because this is what's happening today. And I'm sitting with you as a blessed adult, as a woman that is hugely privileged, but so many people aren't, and so many children are still going through this. And I want people to open their minds and see the ugliness so maybe they would be able to help and have a better of an understanding of what can happen psychologically to a child. So for me, my frustration is I want this book to get... I want it... to get out there. I want people to read it. I want to start a discussion, because we've got like Me Too. We've got all these movements. We got these, you know, we're talking about the church, but we're not speaking about what's happening in houses with people that their children know and that love. And this is a really, really big thing. So yes, I'm hoping to work with abused children. I started doing that in South Africa, and I'm hoping to grow that here.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
Indescribable by Candice Derman is published by Quartet Books. It's been an incredible interview, and I really admire your strength.
Thank you so much. I've loved speaking to you, and I hope we speak again.
For amazing women, always go to radiogorgeous.com.